On this, the first day of Dread October. Good afternoon. I'm Avi Wolf-Manera.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This is Studio 2 Dread October.
Just came up with that.
I know, because the Phillies lost.
And what's your sound effect for that?
I don't have one. Go Phils 2025.
They're going to do the womp womp.
Oh, yeah, womp. Well, I was trying to be positive for you because you look kind of sad.
I'm fine.
Yeah, there's always next year.
You know what they say, Cherry? Mm-hmm. Not every season ends in tears, but most of the good ones do. Aww. Think about that.
It's true.
That's true. A positive spin for
I like it. You always have the glass half full point of view. So, Avi, last week we did a show following the debate between the candidates for vice president. And during that discussion, we spoke about fact-checking. And after the show, the Republican commentator on the show said that she was not a fan of fact-checking because she believes that conservatives are fact-checked more and many feel that they are being censored.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm seeing this, and you're probably seeing this as well. Truth and free speech have become a political talking point at rallies and campaign literature. And it got us thinking about the issue of fact-checking and censorship and the First Amendment and the line between fact-checking and censorship. And so on Studio 2, you know what we do. We do a show about it.
Oh, okay. Got it.
We bring in some experts.
I didn't know.
And we ask a question for the day. And so our question to you is, should media and tech companies step in to define what's real? Or is it better to let the marketplace of ideas decide? We have experts with these differing viewpoints to talk about this issue. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Your thoughts. You look like
my thoughts are, I love the phrase marketplace of ideas.
I know. This is very J school.
It makes me hungry.
It's very J school.
I imagine like a literal marketplace and everyone's got their own stall and they're like, I've got an idea. You've got an idea. And I get to go through the marketplace and check out the ideas. It sounds like a lot of fun. But we do want people to call in today. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And very apropos.
Yeah.
We are going to do our own crowdsourcing activity today.
Oh,
just like we did
last
week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as you know, we always close the show with a song that relates to the topic of the day. And we want your suggestions, and we're going to pick one of you who suggests a song that we really like and we think is really perfect for this particular show. So if you're thinking about a song about truth or lies or
facts. Maybe
there is a song about fact-checking, fiction, let us know. Email us, studio2@whyy.org, and then producer Paige will pick one, and then we'll play it at the end of the show and shout you out.
But you got to get your emails in pretty soon. So by 12:30-ish.
Yeah, exactly, because we have to cut the song.
So email now.
And fit it into the show. Okay, so let's do a trio of local news stories now. And we're starting with a local news story that kind of relates to today's topic, misinformation, disinformation. A Harris voter and lifelong Democrat from Philadelphia has ended up in an anti-Harris attack ad on television. Before we get into the backstory, let me play the portion of the ad that we're talking about.
Imagine a mother who's making minimum wage trying to feed children. They're killing us without killing us.
That is called Bidenomics.
So that was the voice, well, before Kamala Harris, that was the voice of Kimberly Burrell, whose son was a victim of gun violence here in Philadelphia in 2009. She did a group interview with MSNBC over the summer with other people who've lost loved ones to gun violence. And then there were other questions within this larger interview just about politics in general. And MSNBC sort of cut it up for a separate segment called Where Do Black Philadelphia Voters Stand Ahead of the Presidential Election? This woman, Kimberly Burrell, was asked about inflation, and then they took that part and put it in this attack ad against Harris about economics and inflation. I want to credit Helen Ubinas from the Philadelphia Inquirer, who brought all of this to light, in part because she recognized Kimberly Burrell from past interviews with her. So that's the value of local reporting. And she was, surprised to see her in this context. This is not an ad from the Trump campaign. It is an ad from a super PAC called Restoration PAC. Obviously, it's aligned with Trump. And so she had no idea she was going to be in this ad. She's upset that she's in this ad. she supports Harris, even though she has some genuine concerns about inflation. And so that's where we are now, Cherry.
Yeah, I thought this was such an interesting story because on one hand, there's something called the Fair Use Doctrine that allows you to be, you know, clips from news stories like this to be used.
Right. It's not illegal.
It's not illegal. So technically, it's legal for them to do this. And apparently on the show, which, by the way, was dated July 19th, 2 days before President Joe Biden announced he was exiting the race for president. That's when this, you know, the timing of this was taken. So and you watch the video, she seems undecided. She was making these statements about inflation. This was before Harris entered the race.
Sure.
And so technically they did not misrepresent what she actually said. On the other hand, I think about, you know, your clips being used in such a way, it might discourage people from wanting to sit down as voters and share their thoughts with journalists.
And the chilling thing is, effect.
The chilling effect on speech. And this is what we need. We want to hear from journalists. I mean, from voters as journalists. Right.
Right.
And so when you see something like this happen, to make people think, oh, see, I'm not going to talk to anybody because what if my voice, what if my image ends up in an ad like this?
It's an interesting ad because she's clipped in it, but also the CNN commentator Van Jones is clipped in it. And he's also talking about how inflation is hurting black families. And I put those two side by side because I say, you know, Van Jones, very aware that he's in the public sphere, understands that whatever he says could be clipped in this way. Almost all political ads have these clips that are taken out of context,
private
sadly.
Citizens.
But it just feels a little icky. Really icky to do it to someone who's just giving an interview, speaking from their point of view without even informing them that they're going to be in the ad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty cynical about politics and political advertising, but even for me, it just leaves you with a pit in your stomach.
Yeah, especially the reason why I lost his son, all these things.
Exactly, the backstory of it too.
Yeah, but technically, it's not.
Oh, sure. I didn't think it was illegal.
Yeah, yeah,
I never thought it was illegal. Yeah. The question is whether it's immoral.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, let's go to Jersey now.
Yeah. A new proposal in New Jersey is trying to outlaw ghost jobs. You remember that? Fake job listings or posts that companies keep up long after a position has been filled. We did a whole show about it the day after Labor Day. Well, a bill was introduced in the New Jersey legislature that would require companies with 10 or more employees, which publicly advertise job postings, to do a few things. They would have to indicate if the job is for an existing job vacancy. They would also have to provide a timeline for filling the position and then remove the job post within 2 weeks of it being filled. They would also be forced to, if they interview someone, to follow up with the candidate and tell them whether or not they got the job. So no more ghosting, folks, after you sit down and interview. And the kicker is, there's some teeth here.
There's a kicker.
Yeah, because violators would be warned the first time, and then you could get a $1,000 fine, and fines could range up to $5,000. So it's kind of serious. It's a proposal at this point. Of course, job seekers probably like it, but businesses are probably like, no, we don't need any more rules, and we could see this getting out of hand.
Yeah. I don't know. Feels hard to enforce.
Yeah.
Feels very unwieldy.
It seems like anybody who doesn't get a call back, or you don't like, you're mad you didn't get a job, you can file a complaint.
But also, sometimes the ghost jobs are not malicious. It's just that, like, the hiring manager, their department lost some money, or they had to shift priorities and something remains up. Like, obviously, we all want to get rid of the malicious ghost job postings. But I don't know.
Hopefully the industry
maybe
will self-regulate now that people are complaining. We'll see. Maybe they'll start, like, stepping up, you know, on this issue.
Well, don't step up, but look up.
Look up.
Tonight, into the skies in our region, you might see the Northern Lights. The Space Center, that's a great name, the Space Center has issued a severe geomagnetic storm watch for tonight, which means you could see the Northern Lights, Aurora Borealis, right here in Philly, sometime between 9 p.m. and 2 or 3 a.m. That's a pretty big window. I guess you need a lot of coffee to stay up through that whole thing. But you can get some updates, apparently, from the Space Weather Center if you want to know whether these Northern Lights will be visible. That would be cool. I'm not going to stay up, but it would be cool to see it.
You know, I might go up you know, go out and look out around 9:30. And then if I see something, I see something. If I don't, I don't. But I did follow NOAA's Space Weather Prediction Center on X. So I did that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I took a step.
Aurora Borealis, that term,
mm-hmm.
coined by Galileo.
Oh.
I learned that on Wikipedia. So maybe it's true.
You don't know.
That's crowdsourced.
Exactly.
It's crowdsourced. So that leads us into our topic today. Should
transition.
We crowdsource fact-checking, or should we appoint people, tech companies, independent organizations to do that for us? Let us know. 888-477-9499, Studio 2 at WHYY.org. We'll be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
I'm a little cynical, I guess. And if someone's telling me something is fact-checked, I wonder why they're telling me that and what their motives are.
If it were, like, Elon Musk's ex that was doing the fact-checking, I would trust it a lot less rather than a community note.
I feel like I am just inherently a little skeptical of things that I see online. It's hard because you never really know what to trust.
This is Studio 2. Welcome back. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. You just heard from Drew in Bedford, New Jersey, Lily in Philadelphia, and Kevin in New Jersey. And Cherry, you've probably heard this refrain before. I read it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it on Instagram. My neighbor posted it on X. Almost all of us get information these days on social media, but sorting fact from exaggeration, from outright fiction, can seem impossible. And that's a problem when there's, say, a presidential election or a hurricane.
Oh, yes. And some social media platforms, they've tried to help by adding little truth badges to posts. They either have been fact-checked by an organization or by users on the platform. But where does fact-checking end and censorship begin? That is the question we want to discuss with you and our guests today. And let me introduce our guests. We have Will Creeley, Legal Director of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, short FIRE, with us. Will, thank you so much for being here and welcome to Studio 2.
It's an honor. Thank you for having me.
And also with us in our WHYY studios is Eugene Kiley, Director of FactCheck.org. Eugene, welcome to you as well.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And our third guest is you, the listener at home. And a lot of you are already very fired up, and no pun intended there, Will. Should media and tech companies step in to define what's real, or is it better to let the marketplace of ideas decide? And people apparently hate that we're using that phrase even, marketplace of ideas. So give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
And so I wanted to start our conversation because we talked about this growing debate over whether fact-checking is a necessary tool for protecting truth or whether it infringes on free speech. So I want each of you to sort of lay out your position on this topic by defining where you see that line. And Will, I'd like to start with you, and then Eugene after that.
Sure, thank you. The critical question is, who's doing the fact-checking? If you or I or factcheck.org is doing the fact-checking, great, that's all more speech. If it's the government, say the state of Florida or the federal government or the state of New York saying this is true and this isn't, that makes me a little bit more nervous. If they are saying you cannot publish that view because it isn't true, that makes me very nervous. At that point, we start looking like a regime that has sole control of the truth. And that's what the First Amendment is designed to protect against. Other than that, I say let everybody speak and we will figure it out.
So your response is more speech.
More speech. You
more
got
speech.
It.
More speech. Okay. Mm-hmm. Eugene, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, as a fact-checking organization, we are there to provide information to people, and they can do with it what they want. So when we apply ratings to certain posts on Facebook, for example, they can click on our story, take a read on it, get more information, or not. It's their option. So there is no censorship as far as I'm concerned. What we're doing is providing the opportunity to get more information and better information.
Let me read in some emails. So Miranda says, the marketplace of ideas is a good thing. The marketplace of facts is not. If you consider yourselves journalists, you should not be attempting to conflate the two. Conservatives, get fact-checked more because they say more things that aren't true. And we've got a lot of emails along those same lines. So, Will Creeley, what do you make of that? We use this phrase, marketplace of ideas, and I think what we're trying to get at is the idea of whether it's more effective to kind of crowdsource fact-checking than it is to have like a single organization attempt to do it. But when I say that we're a marketplace of ideas, like, what do you think that implies, and how do you kind of like fit it into the conversation we're having today?
Right. The idea is not that there are a million truths or alternative facts or that truth is unknowable, right? I can go outside when we leave the studio today and say, you know what, it's a little chilly today. It's about 57 degrees, right? And that is objectively true. What I get worried about is when elected officials say, if you don't toe this line, there will be punishments or penalties. We've seen that run aground pretty quickly. And I think that that's a danger to both folks on the left and folks on the right. We had an interesting example in my office we were discussing this week. The state of Florida has responded to an ad advocating for Kamala Harris and Democratic candidates criticizing the new abortion laws in the state of Florida. And it's an ad that features a woman who's got a terminal disease and said her doctor told her if she doesn't have an abortion, she will lose her life. Mm-hmm. And she's telling this incredibly heart-wrenching story in the ad. She got the group that ran the ad got a very nasty kind of cease and desist. Otherwise, you know, you'll be facing prosecution letter from the Florida Department of Health that said, your ad is untrue. There are exceptions for the life of the mother. Now, the group that ran the ad said, well, wait a second, those exceptions wouldn't apply to her. But you see what I mean, right? Yeah. If you have a situation where an elected official and the political apparatus and the political considerations that go into their decision-making process is allowed to say, take that down, we think it's untrue, otherwise we'll use the power of the state, we'll enforce it, we'll penalize you, that starts looking like censorship. And that can cut both ways.
Yeah, and just to be clear, lies are protected by the First Amendment.
That is true. Yeah, that's right. There's a 2011 case called Alvarez v. United States. This is a kind of a hilarious case. I recommend listeners to read it if you're interested. It almost reads like a short article in The Atlantic or The New Yorker. The first line is, lying was his habit. It's about a man who really was a pathological liar. And he gets up at a water board meeting. He's been elected to the water board in Pomona, California. And he says, you know, as a Medal of Honor recipient and a Marine Corps veteran, he was neither, right? Yeah. So he's threatened with prosecution under a federal law that made it illegal to lie about receiving the highest honor you can receive from our federal government. There are only about 3,500 Medal of Honor recipients, and he wasn't one of them. So he challenges this. He says, First Amendment protects me. The court, in a divided opinion, says, lies cannot be regulated by the government in this way. We have to rely on more speech. The threat to our democratic process by allowing the government to penalize folks for telling untruths, if we let that cat out of the bag, it will swallow the system whole.
Yeah. I want to bring in a caller. We have Mark from Bartow, Pennsylvania, who has a comment. Mark, you're on Studio 2. What is your comment?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. For media, responsible media, I think they just need to make sure that they do a vetted fact-checking service. And I think it should be a requirement. But I think anybody that's responsible, like you guys, do that. Mm-hmm. And for the conservatives feeling like they're being targeted, maybe they just should check their information before they open their mouths.
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective from Mark. So, Eugene Kiley, we're talking about this idea of vetting information and determining whether it's true or not. But sometimes it's hard for people to tell how you know what the baseline truth is, especially on some topics. So how do you all go about it? When you fact check a claim, what information are you using to determine where you should benchmark the truth?
Right. Well, it depends on what the subject is, what the claim is being made as to where we're going to go to get information. But we're seeking to get the primary sources and seeking to get the best available information that is out there. And all of our stories include hyperlinks to all the information that we have. So before we publish an article, we ourselves will fact check it to make sure that we have the right information. And we do that through the links in our stories. And that is, I always tell readers who ask who fact checks the fact checkers. Yeah. Well, you do, because we're providing you with the same information. So if it's a claim on, let's say, jobs, mm-hmm. well, you go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which has job data going back, you know, to 1929. So, you know, there are my boss calls the custodians of knowledge. And these are organizations that have information and data that they've been collecting for a long time, a very transparent process for providing information and collecting information. So those are the people that we go to.
Mm. And quick question to you, mm-hmm. Eugene. How do you determine? There's so much, just a lot of misinformation, disinformation on social media, being said on ads, being discussed on the news, what have you. How do you decide which facts to check?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're always looking for what we call consequential deceptions. And these are deceptions that have the ability to harm the person getting that misinformation, whether it's health and science, like misinformation about COVID-19, mm-hmm. or whether it's just getting misinformation that will make you or have you cast a vote that's misinformed. So that's what we're looking for, is consequential deceptions, and also those deceptions that are viral or have the potential to go viral. Mm.
Laura and Ambler says, a marketplace of ideas that puts fairy tales and lies on the same level as objective, evidence-based information is a recipe for confusion and delusion and enables liars to have power over people. I want to bring in a caller now. This is Shirley in Claymont, Delaware, who wants to talk about the danger of lies. Maybe Shirley agrees with what Laura and Ambler just said. Shirley, you're on Studio 2. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah. Yep, you're here. Yeah, you're
what's
live
your question
on Studio
or comment?
2.
Mm-hmm.
What I had said before was that there are actual truths and actual lies. And my example was that the earth is round. Mm-hmm. It is not flat. And round is truth and flat is a lie. And that I think that truth should be allowed and actual lies should not be allowed on social media and taught in schools. Mm. And that lies cause radicalization and death and confusion and separation of our lives. It causes people to have warped views and is just not good. It just can't, it's like yelling fire in a theater.
Thank you, Shirley. Goes Shirley. Will, how would you respond? Like, what would you do? What should we do when someone posts on social media the earth is flat?
Well, you've got a couple of choices, right? You can mm-hmm. debunk them. You can point them to information from folks like the good people at factcheck.org. You can ignore it. You can, you know, start your own site that says, we're not going to allow those flat earthers to come over here and post. You've got all those various options. And that is how the system, I think, ultimately should work. What we would be concerned about is some kind of legislative or governmental response that would penalize that kind of information. Because it's easy to say on a straightforward example, or I mean, at least at this point, it wasn't so easy back in, say, Galileo's day, right? But yeah. It's easy to say now that, yes, the earth is round. It's not flat. And if you say it's flat, you're just wrong. You're lying. It's either misinformation, disinformation, you know, whatever your game is, you're wrong. It gets harder at the edge cases. And that's where you have to watch out, right? If you say...
Well, what's an edge case?
Well, let's
for
think,
you?
Think about the horrors of the pandemic that we're just now starting to get our distance from and being able to see clearly. There were pushes from the federal government to say, if you are criticizing the vaccine, if you're saying the vaccine won't actually mm-hmm. stop transmission, that's dangerous speech and it's going to cost people's lives. So you had pushes from elected officials and others to have that kind of speech removed from social media. At that point, that may have been the best information we had. But here's the thing about science. You keep learning more. It yeah. turns out that the vaccines, you know, they are extremely effective in many ways, but they did not stop transmission that way. The truth in our liberal science system can be a moving target. You cannot have a system that penalizes you for putting forth a hypothesis or a best guess or even a contrary idea. That's how we figure things out. There's that classic quote from John Milton, the Enlightenment thinker, you know, put truth and falsehood out in the field, you know, let them grapple. Whoever knew truth put to the worst in a free and fair encounter. And it's to folks complaining about the marketplace analogy, I get it, right? It's not that all ideas in the marketplace are created equal. It's just like not all, you know, steak or bananas is created equal. If I buy steak in a back alley, that's, you know, maybe a sketchy steak, right? But if I go to a place where I know the steak is going to be, you know, USDA Prime, et cetera, if it's been checked out by factcheck.org, then I've got some more reliability. Mm-hmm. And so context matters a little bit here. I just want to say that we can deplore lies. We can agree with the caller's point about the devastating impact on lies, on families and our political system, et cetera. But be careful, because the quote-unquote cure of government arbitrated truth might be worse than the disease.
And I want to invite you, our listeners, to participate. Our question of the day is, should media and tech companies step in to define what's real, or is it better left to the marketplace of ideas? You can call 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We're speaking with Will Creeley, Legal Director for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, or FIRE. We also have Eugene Kiley, Director of FactCheck.org. Will, I had a follow-up question for you on this whole danger of misinformation. We've seen the impact of misinformation during hurricane season, right? Politicized. You have people who are at the top of the food chain when it comes to information, intentionally giving out misinformation. Is there ever a line when the government should step in? Because, and I ask you this, knowing that, you know, it could cost lives. People may not evacuate, right?
That's right.
They may not call for assistance when they need it because they're hearing this from public officials.
Mm-hmm.
When should the government step in, if at ever?
Yeah, Cherry, it's such a good question. I was thinking all week that this is a very timely conversation,
yeah,
keeping an eye on what's been happening on social media with regard to misinformation. I would posit to you that actually, you know, and thank goodness for this, actually the system worked, because you had elected officials come back and counter some of the misinformation we were seeing, as you say, from the very top, from folks who should frankly know better. And it was irresponsible. And they were called out for it. And I think in this instance, the truth did generally out, right? You had broadcast media, you had elected officials. I think it was a Republican elected official in North Carolina, mm-hmm, I think, who said, listen, this is not a geoengineered, you know, storm. They're not mining for lithium on the mm-hmm Smoky Mountains or whatever. You know, just all these crazy claims. I think that after a while, there are diminishing returns for lies. There's this interesting point that's made in the research about misinformation and its impact, is that most people self-appraise that they're too smart for misinformation. They're worried about everybody else out there, right? The idea is
I'm
smart, everybody else is an idiot. I'm not worried about them. I can tell the difference, but I'm worried about all those idiots out there who are going to be gullible. I think that the people are generally smart enough. Not all people, right? We can all think of somebody in our minds right now who might fall for it. But I think that generally, the way our system has always worked, because misinformation is not new, it feels more intense because of social media and the omnipresence of internet communications. But this is an old problem. People have been lying since, you know, there are people,
right?
The first person who could talk, next person started lying. So I think that in the long run, if you have the system, creaky though it may be, if you have coming out, it will win.
Let me ask about that, though, the fact, because you mentioned it's been around for a long time. People have been lying since the beginning of the Republic and further back. But what's changed is the speed at which lies travel.
Mm-hmm.
And spread, yeah.
And also, in a situation like a hurricane, the speed in which vital information is needed, right? You can't have it debunked the next week and benefit from that debunking. And I think that's where we get into more of a gray area.
Thank you. I mean, I realize I did not answer your question, Cherry. Mm-hmm. So let me answer it specifically. There are categories of speech. Not all speech is protected by the First Amendment.
Sure.
Yes.
I work for a First Amendment advocacy group, right? Mm-hmm. There are narrowly defined, carefully defined categories of unprotected speech. They include defamation, right? Mm-hmm. Think about the Fox Dominion lawsuit, right? Mm-hmm. If Fox hosts go on air and they knowingly repeat falsehoods in such a way that damages Dominion, there's a lawsuit.
$700 million.
You got it. I think mm-hmm it was $787 million, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
And in the instance of a hurricane, and the caller brought up the old falsely shouting fire in a crowded theater, which is this pretty, you know, dog-eared, factually incorrect characterization of an old Supreme Court case. But the idea is that there are some speeches beyond the pale. To your question, if I was saying something to a group of people, truth or lie, and it was about to cause imminent harm, it was likely and directed to cause imminent harm, at that point, I might be wandering from protected speech under the First Amendment into unprotected incitement.
And you think the government then could intervene.
Unprotected incitement. That's right.
Yeah, that's why I cited this hurricane situation, mm-hmm, because this is something that's happening in real time. And Eugene, I want you to weigh in because I saw you nodding and to some of this conversation. But that's real-time misinformation when seconds, maybe hours count, really, and getting that misinformation could cause whole swaths of people to lose their lives or be endangered or have their property endangered. And so, you know, your thoughts on this, Eugene, come on into the conversation.
Yeah, well, in those situations, fact-checking really can help because it does take time in order to gather the information, publish an article, get it on our website. So in those cases, you do need someone in authority like the National Weather, NOAA or these organizations that are out there to provide accurate information. And they do it. They could do it, through X and all the other social media sites that they have. So in those cases, we have to, as a public, need to go to the sources that we as fact checkers would go to.
Mm-hmm. And so it's time for the government agencies. They have to step up with more speech.
They have to step up with more speech. The alternative, I think about the Vietnam War, right? One of the most famous cases involving press rights in our country, the Pentagon Papers. For years, folks died overseas. American soldiers died overseas, not to mention the folks they were fighting against. And the United States citizenry was not fully apprised of the circumstances in which they were fighting. I mean, that was government-sponsored misinformation. So you just have to be very careful in those instances. Let's say somebody's broadcasting lies about the hurricane. You have to be careful of folks coming in and saying, you know what, you're under arrest. Because different elected officials will have different lines as where they're drawn to say, now's the time to suspend your civil liberties.
Well, let me bring in a caller.
Yes.
This is Christine from North Wales, Pennsylvania, who wants to join the conversation. Christine, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that I don't think it should only be government, but I just had I felt a very sad situation where a friend posted during the whole hurricane situation a horrible thing about that it was the Helene hurricane was created by frequency transmissions, and it was actually like a real org site, geoengineering something. And when I went to it, which I'm like scrambling to go to it, working like while I'm trying to get to work, it wasn't real. And then when I texted her, because I was too embarrassed to put it back on Facebook for her, I was like, did you do any fact checking? She goes, I'm just so stressed. I don't know what to believe anymore when I'm reading these posts. And it was heartbreaking to see all the other comments like buying into her post that was fake.
That is scary.
And it's sad.
Scary. It's sad. Thank you, Christine. Look, Will, we've been talking about where the line should be legally. But I, in some ways, the bigger question is, what is actually effective at combating something like that?
Yeah.
Is it that USDA-style stamp of truth? Or is it people getting together and saying, we've all done collectively some research and the wisdom of the crowd has delivered this verdict? I mean, what do you think? Because I think maybe we'll set this up after the break. I'd really like to get into effectiveness versus the principle of the matter. Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, that's a great way of phrasing it. I would take the latter almost 9 times out of 10.
Wisdom of the crowd.
Let's say this presidential election goes one way or the other. You could have somebody say, you know, actually the hurricane's going to hit over here. Let me get out my Sharpie and draw it for you. At that point, you're still talking about the government stamp, but I'm not sure I can believe it. What I can believe and what I put my faith in every time, and this is no matter which way any election goes, is what other folks have found and built to be true. The institutions that they've built together that have truth seeking as their purpose or function. And I put my faith in the ability of folks to discern false from true in that way. There are some social media sites that I've frankly just left because they, you know, it's like going into, again, to use our supermarket analogy, going into a supermarket place that always has kind of lousy produce. At some point, I'm just not going to believe it anymore. I'd like to think that the caller's friend, having, you know, I can relate. I think many of us feel bombarded with information. Maybe next time she will think about where she's getting her information from. Teaching media literacy more broadly, right? I talk to my 10-year-old and 7-year-old all the time about knowing where you get your news from, knowing where you get your information from, reading the article before reposting it, you know, doing a little bit of work on your end. That's how we're going to get out of this.
Really, it feels a little Pollyanna, mm-hmm. though, to think we can educate our way out of this as we watch this thing metastasize in real time. I mean, people, mm-hmm. what that caller described is, like you said, something we've all seen. And it feels sometimes like we're losing the battle and sort of waiting for the wisdom of the crowd to surface is like waiting for Godot.
You know what I mean? And I also feel like you can't put it back in the bottle. You know, once someone gets negative or wrong information, they're walking around with this incorrect information. So
we're coming up on a break real quick, Eugene. Anyway. Yeah.
But the caller did exactly what she should have done, is to check the source.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the person who shared that information just shared it without checking the source. And that is one of the things that we always tell our readers. This is like the primary tip for anyone out there is don't pass on information until you've checked the source.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, look, we're about to come up on a break, but Will, you're sitting with what I just said. We'll give you a chance to respond on the other side of this break. We're talking about truth today, how we sort truth from fiction, and who should be doing the sorting. Email us. Studio2@whyy.org. Call us 888-477-9499. We will be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
And welcome back on in to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Today we are talking about searching for the truth, fact-checking, censorship, etc. I want to reintroduce our guests. With us today are Will Creeley, legal director of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, also known as FIRE, and Eugene Kiley, director of factcheck.org.
And we want to hear from you. Do you feel fact-checking should be in the hands of the community? Or should big companies be required to separate truth from fiction? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or call 888-477-9499. And I want to bring in a caller. We have Joe from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Joe, you are on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for having me on. I think this is a great topic to have, especially as you said, we're heading into an election just under a month away. I feel like my point of view is, I think it takes all of us, you know, I think it takes us as members of a civic society to inform ourselves, to have media literacy, as was mentioned, and really think about what it is we're looking at, where we're getting that information from, and what's the motivation behind some of these companies for the information that either they're putting out or they're promoting pretty heavily, because, you know, different organizations may have different leanings. They may have different backings from different, would say, like PACs or different organizations that want to push a certain agenda. So I think it really takes all of us at the end of the day to, if we want to promote a society of free thinking but also responsible thinking, we should all have a part to play in the discussion.
Joe from Cherry Hill.
Cherry Hill. That's a really valid perspective, I think. And let me put that to you, Eugene Kiley, because I think where you can run into issues with sort of the official fact checkers is that people don't trust their motivations. They think they're controlled. They don't believe that they're independent. So if you partner with, say, a Facebook, you partner with X, people will assume that you really don't have the independence to filter the truth the way the truth should be filtered. Can you really get past that trust barrier with people?
Well, that is a challenge. But take a look at our website and take a look at our funding, for example. The money that we get from Facebook is a small amount of the funding that we get overall. And take a look at the work that we're producing and the sources that we're using. And, you know, we fact check both sides. You know, we're nonpartisan. Based at the University of Pennsylvania, we have access to some of the best experts on any of these issues. We're writing about COVID-19. We're going to Paul Offit.
But it's so interesting, you know, to me, though, because when you say that to me, I'm getting like sort of positive coding from all of that. Mm-hmm. University of Pennsylvania, yes, mm-hmm. Paul Offit, we've had mm-hmm. him on the show.
Right.
We know he knows a lot. Some people hear University of Pennsylvania and think elites, ivory tower, mm-hmm. controlled by something, who knows what that thing is. Maybe they don't even really know what it is. And that, I think, is the tough part when we talk about effectiveness. Like, do you think you guys have unlocked the door there so that you can convince people who are skeptical of institutions to trust an institutional fact checker?
No. There are going to be some people you just can't reach.
Yeah.
You know, we are there for the people who are going to be seeking out to get the accurate right. information, like the phone caller who was fact-checking her friend's post.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so if we're if they have access to the information that we're providing, and then they are spreading that to their family, friends, and sharing that information, yeah. then, you know, that's the marketplace of ideas.
Right. Yeah.
But we're part of that marketplace.
Well, yeah, exactly. What I hear you saying is we're a part of the solution, but we admit that we are not the entire solution.
Because absolutely.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I want to bring in another caller. We have Bill from Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, on the line. Bill, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, I was just wondering about fact-checking. Is it actually important for people to understand that it's way more difficult to check the truthfulness of something than it is to make something up? In the same way that in science, it's a lot easier to make a hypothesis mm-hmm. than to disprove or prove a hypothesis. And you guys are working in fact-checking. I think it's really important. But is it important to educate the public about that incredible difference, that disparity? Thanks.
I mean, that's so important, I think, because what's the phrase that the truth gets around the world before the lie gets around the world before the truth has a chance to put on its mm-hmm. pants or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I hear Bill saying is that truth is at a structural disadvantage because it's so easy to lie. I mean, so does that would suggest that the lies are going to outcompete the truth, Will? I mean, what do you think about that?
I say same as it ever was, right? I have to be an optimist to do First Amendment work, right? I have to be an optimist to think you let folks decide for themselves. And I really like the way that Joe from Cherry Hill put it, that we are a nation of free thinking but civically responsible folks. And I think that's the only way out. You know, you said before the break, Avi, you know, if I was maybe giving you kind of an optimistic Pollyanna-ish view of how this works, I don't think there's any other alternative. Hmm. I don't think that we can, you know, outsource or delegate or deputize somebody to be, you know what, you're the official truth teller. You're good, right? It's like, what's the old Greek myth, Diogenes looking around for an honest man. There's nobody who's ever going to be able to fill that role ultimately free from bias. And, you know, don't get me started about AI fact checking or something like that, right? None of that is going to work. The only way we can do this in our democratic system of self-governance is to do it ourselves and to do the hard work. That's it. There are no shortcuts here.
I want to read this comment from Frank, who says, "You are the marketplace of ideas. Where else but media and journalism to get the facts, the data? But there lies your tremendous responsibility to be accurate, fair, and full." Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is this. We used to be, journalism used to be this place where people knew that they could go and get accurate information that represented all different ideas. But now that media has sort of gotten partisan, some people feel like they can't trust what journalists and media organizations are saying. And so how does that impact? And I'm thinking about you, Eugene, mm-hmm. there's an election coming up. What are some of the challenges you're seeing as we try to deal and filter through all this stuff when some of the organizations people used to rely on, they don't necessarily trust anymore?
Right. Well, prior to being working at factcheck.org, I was in the newspaper business. Worked at Philadelphia Inquirer, USA Today, Bergen Record in New Jersey. And over that time, I have seen how, you know, news media has blurred commentary with news, and it's cable TV is a big offender of this. Mm-hmm. Newspapers, when I first started, it was unusual to see a news analysis, quote unquote, on the front page of a paper. That wasn't something that happened. So, you know, it's been over time because of the changes in the news industry and because of social media now that has allowed everybody to essentially be a publisher, that has had a corrosive effect on public trust in the news media.
Let me read this email from Kevin because it's directly for you, Will. How does your guest resolve the disparity created by the reality that the primary purveyors of lies in our political arena are also the folks who would reduce the number and effectiveness of government regulations and agencies? I think a lot of people are scared of that reality. That basically, I think what Kevin's describing is a scenario where basically the liars win.
You got it. Mm-hmm.
You know, they lie their way into power. Then they use the power to create more distortions or to limit the federal government in a way so that it cannot produce the reliable information that Eugene relies on. I mean, aren't you worried that we're getting toward that scenario?
Absolutely. That's why we're in court in Florida right now challenging the Stop Woke Act, which is a state law that would limit what public university professors in the state can teach about, barring them from criticizing systemic inequality, racism, and so forth. That's why a lot of the work that we do focuses on education on campus. Absolutely. And there's also this concern about the liar's dividend, right? If we think everybody's lying, if we become such a skeptical populace that we don't trust anybody, well, then the cost for lying is greatly reduced. This is maybe what the emailer is getting at, right? If you can't trust anybody, we're living in this kind of Kremlin Soviet situation where folks are so confused as to what may or may not be true that they just give up.
Yeah.
Right. That's why you got to do the hard work of just doing it every day, palms up, honest defense of free speech or honest reporting in journalism. Before I went to law school, I was thinking about J school. I have to believe, again, this is back to my optimistic bet, that there is a market for reliable information, that people want to know, if I go outside today, what's the weather going to be? What votes did you actually take? And you have to make that part of your value proposition, right? Whether you're a media outlet.
The truth
like,
wins is what you're saying.
When you're, whether you're a media outlet like WHYY or... You know, even an outlet that has got some partisan shadings, you have to be consistent in that regard to build up the market. My concern, I think, is that, you know, outrage sells, right?
Mm-hmm. The clicks, that
hate,
gets the clicks.
Hate sells,
yeah.
Right? People are interested in anger, and they like that dopamine click of what's our daily outrage of the day. And this is true of both left and right. Mm-hmm. And trying to get past that to a situation where if you do win that election, if folks who are kind of benefiting from a quote-unquote post-truth environment do win, that they don't just have the keys to this turnkey authoritarian state where it's like, all right, now we're going to tell you what the truth is. That's the thing. I just do not trust the government to be the one. They can be one voice, but they're not the sole arbiter. That's where I get nervous.
Yeah, I want to read this email from Jen, who says, the problem is that our First Amendment is being used against us. Lies are being told. One side is believing it and refuses to hear the truth. The people lying know they can't be fact-checked by the government or anybody official, so they're using it against us. It used to be that news organizations had to at least try to tell the truth. So I want to talk about the future a little bit because, you know, we're at a place where there's AI, people doing fake voices, fake images, social media spreads like wildfire, like misinformation. What do you think the future of this whole idea of trying to find truth? Because democracy doesn't work without people having some semblance of a similar understanding, right? So Eugene, tell me, what do you think the future will look like when it comes to fact-checking and keeping everybody on the same page?
Well, we're seeing that right now with, you know, these images that are being altered or created, voices that are that using artificial intelligence to create these robocalls that are going out. There was one where it was supposedly Joe Biden. I think it was New Hampshire, telling people that don't vote in the primary, So it's happening now, but it's still in its infancy, and it's kind of scary to think how difficult this is going to be for fact checkers to deal with in the future. Mm. So this is something that greatly concerns me.
Real quick, Will, the future looks like?
So far, you got to call it out when you see it, right? If you see that Joe Biden ad, the reason we know about it is because people heard it, said this doesn't sound right. And you folks called it out. It was a national news story. Likewise, right. DeSantis had fighter jets brought into one of his ads, and people said, wait a second, there were no fighter jets, right? So, again, I'm placing a bet on folks figuring out truth from falsity.
The people.
And that is Will Creeley, legal director of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, also known as FIRE. Will, thanks so much for your time this hour.
Thank you.
And we also heard from Eugene Kiley, director of factcheck.org. Eugene, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Enjoyed that conversation.
A rich
much.
Conversation. Yes. We also got some great nominations for our closing song today. Mm-hmm. But we can only have one winner, Cherry.
Okay.
That winner The winner is Yoel, who nominated the Talking Heads song Cross-Eyed and Painless. Yoel said, quote, I'm most familiar with the live version from Stop Making Sense. So we said, our producer said, okay, here's the live version. And one lyric in the song, and that's why it was nominated.
Yeah.
Facts are simple and facts are straight. Also, shout out to John and Thomas, Michelle, Jeff, Carl, Jim, Sherry, Alex, Michael, Mary. A lot of people nominated Gimme Some Truth by John Lennon. So that would have been a good one, too. But Yoel, you are our music DJ of the week. Congratulations.
Love that. And that wraps our show for today and for the week. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will stop making sense and talk to you next week.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.